Today's program marks a follow-up to a program City Club and We Rise Together hosted last year at the North Lawndale Employment Network. I will make a shout-out to Brenda and the infamous bee stinger in her cafe. How many have visited the cafe? Okay, so that's enough because I don't want anybody to get in line so I can't get my bee stinger. I often say that I put the medicine ball from Starbucks on the map. I'm on my way to putting the bee stinger on the map. Thank you, Brenda, for hosting us over a year ago. Please now welcome Andrea Seance to the stage. And then after she comes up, we're going to get the program started, and Brandis will take it from there, and I'll be back to close. Here comes my friend, Andrea.
Hello.
Good to
Thank
see
you, Jackie.
You.
Wonderful to
I'm
see you.
Move your
oh,
mic
great.
Down
yeah,
a
little
bit.
Down. Okay. Hi, everyone. This is usually the way it goes. thank you so much, Jackie. And I do want to acknowledge Northern Trust's really 100-year support for the Chicago Community Trust efforts in Chicago. So thank you so much. Thank you for everything you do. Huge thanks to the City Club for hosting yet again a talk about We Rise Together, this time not in North Lawndale, not with Brenda, but here in its home base. As the region's community foundation, the Trust works with so many people in this room and not in this room towards our shared vision for a region where folks have access to opportunity, where they're born, no matter where they're from. And so I just want to say it's so wonderful to stand up here and look across the room and see so many people who I know are working shoulder to shoulder on this work. I also want to thank J.P. Morgan Chase for sponsoring today's program and for participating in the program and for all you do for Chicago. Your commitment is tangible and so pleased that you're here. And I'm especially excited to be here with so many of the community partners that have made this idea of We Rise Together come to life because they were already doing this work before We Rise happened. So if you are here representing an organization that receives support from We Rise Together for any project that you're working on, could you please stand and just be acknowledged? Yes. These are the folks. Thank you for everything you do every day on behalf of all of us in Chicago. So We Rise Together is a funder collaborative, one that we are so privileged to have helped shape and host at the Chicago Community Trust. And the idea behind it was, during really the height of the pandemic, of the COVID crisis in 2020, when things were looking really grim and we had no idea where we were going, you know, we knew that the relief efforts were critical and were keeping people alive today, and that those communities that were hardest hit by the health crises, the social crises, and really the economic crises created by the pandemic would be in a much more vulnerable position after the sort of dust started to settle than folks that had resources and means. And so the idea really was to figure out a way to jumpstart economic recovery in those neighborhoods hardest hit by the pandemic. And many of you were there, you were at the table, you know, helped us try to understand where is that? What communities are we talking about? What characterizes those neighborhoods and those communities? And helped develop this notion of, okay, well, what will it take? And we landed on this idea of, you know, it's the brick and mortar developments. It's the buildings, it's the stuff that community leaders are trying to create in their neighborhoods that provide, you know, after-school programs, health services, house small businesses, you know, provide employment services, financial services, all of those things. And that communities had, you know, lo and behold, already been planning those things for many, many years. And a little bit of economic help and then lots of the technical assistance and sort of rallying behind the projects that We Rise was able to deliver was really what it would take. And I stand here today, and I can't wait to hear the panelists really describe how this all came together, to say that, you know, to date, so we started making grants in 2021. We've made $46 million in grants supporting 40 real estate projects that together today are valued at $500 million. That's what the applause was meant to be for, a half a billion. of value has been created through these collective efforts. We'll hear more about that from the panelists, and particularly about the importance of community leadership to this vision and to making these things actually come to life. I don't know if you guys, some of you were in the room where people would say, like, is this really going to work? You know, are these projects really going to get built? We know it's hard. So many barriers, so many obstacles, and they have. And also, you know, we're learning along the way, and Kendra from MPC is on our panel. She's going to describe a little bit what we've learned about the real barriers and obstacles, the bureaucratic barriers and obstacles to getting these things done, that we're hoping to build from, you know, take those lessons and try to improve the system and improve the process for projects that are happening moving forward. We've also made grants to support workforce development to make sure that when a building gets built and a thing gets open, that folks who live in that community can benefit from the employment opportunities created there, and so much more. So I'm actually going to say, without further ado, I will turn this over to Brandis so we can hear from our program participants. So come on up, Brandis from WTTW. You are the best moderator. I hope nobody is offended by that I've ever seen talk about these issues. So I'm really happy that you've agreed to help moderate for us today. And the panel will introduce themselves. Thank you so much. Enjoy your lunch.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Come on in. Kevin, you can come this way. No problem. How is everyone?
All right.
Hello. Thank you. We've got a really good crowd. I want to thank everybody for being here. And I want to take a quick beat. I think all of you know who our panelists are, but for good measure, for those of you who don't know who some of them are, maybe you know one, but not all four, I'm going to ask our panelists to do a quick introduction of themselves, and then I'm going to start with Kristen, please, and then we'll get further into the discussion.
Hi, I'm Kristen Wiggins. I am the director of We Rise Together, and I've had the great pleasure of getting to find and work with and support all of the grantees that Andrea mentioned earlier.
Hi, I'm Kendra Freeman. I'm the Vice President of Programs and Strategy at the Metropolitan Planning Council, and we've been super excited to be a partner with We Rise for a number of years.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrea Youssefi, and I'm the Chief of Partnerships and Development at By the Hand Club for Kids, and we were a recipient of We Rise Together funding.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kevin Goldsmith. I lead a team with in community development banking at JPMorgan Chase. We invest in tax credits and also provide funding for CDFIs, and proud to be associated with We Rise.
Brandis Friedman, WTTW. Thank you. Thank you. I think Jackie forgot viewers like you when she mentioned the list of sponsors. That sounds like they're from WTTW. My development team, they're in the audience too, so you're welcome. So I want to start a little bit about like the respective positions that each of you mentioned, and I'm actually going to start with Kendra because I've got other questions for you, Kristen. but to tell me a little bit about specifically your work and your role in We Rise Together, and kind of what you love about it. What's exciting?
Oh, sure. So Metropolitan Planning Council, we are celebrating our 90th anniversary this year. I can't believe it. We are a planning and policy change organization working in the Chicago region towards racial and economic justice through policy and systems change. And so we got to know We Rise probably in 2020 when we were invited to be a thought partner when the trust was really thinking about structure and building out the steering committee. And that led to us working more closely with the staff in terms of when they were kicking off kind of like the first year in 2022, I think it was, and we helped to co-design and co-convene working groups with We Rise in South Shore, in Chatham, and in Lawndale. And I guess when you asked me about what was exciting for us, I mean, often we work on policy issues and we try to do a collaborative process, but really being able to have real time with grantees and project leads who are struggling through getting their projects through construction and permitting and thinking about post-occupancy and marketing and all these challenges, it was really informative to us. So we were grateful to be able to provide that space, but also really better understand some of the challenges that they were facing and able to really inform our work as a policy change organization.
And I definitely want to come back to what you mentioned about some of the challenges that were discovered along the way and what we know about those and how they're being remedied. Andrea.
Well, by the Hand Club for Kids, we're a faith-based after-school program that serves over 1,800 kids across the city of Chicago holistically, mind, body, and soul. And I started with By the Hand Club 6 years ago in partnership with two other nonprofit organizations to transform a 10-acre brownfield into a holistic campus for sports, education, and social services to close the opportunity gap for Westside youth and families. And we had this incredible groundbreaking event in August 2021. We had our permits. We had a phenomenal team, Jason Hayward. We had the Chicago Fire. And by October, we were already facing significant challenges with our project. What we've learned from Kristen is called the Valley of Death, where unexpected arises. And because we were a brownfield, we had done years of due diligence with environmental testing. But once you dig in the ground, there's always so much more. So we were looking at $1 million and above in cost escalations. Also at the time was inflation. And so we were connected with We Rise Together in October. We found out we were a grant recipient in December. We had working capital by January to address those concerns, and we were able to open our doors over a year ago. And our biggest and most exciting news is our feasibility study initially said we'd serve 25,000 max. That was after a couple year ramp up. In a little over 1 year, we've served 60,000 youth, 12,000 adults.
That's awesome.
It's so, yeah. It's mind-blowing. It's yeah. So exciting, yeah. and impactful.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Kevin.
Following impacting 12,000 youth is hard to follow. So. But on behalf of JPMorgan Chase, we're really proud to be a partner with We Rise since its inception. We've not only been a funder to We Rise, but also had the honor of co-investing on several projects. I've mentioned I'm part of the Community Development Banking Group, and so within our group, we are investing in tax credits, and many of these projects have been eligible for the New Market Tax Credit Program because of just the catalytic real estate investment that these projects are able to make for their community. And one of the beauties of We Rise is just like how early to the table the funds have been to really help aggregate other capital and make other capital confident that project is going to have sufficient funds to move forward. And in the New Market Tax Credit arena, we've been able to help bring tax credits and then purchase those credits by investing in that project for the North Lawndale Employment Network with Brenda, I saw here, Build. We're extremely excited to have been a part of that $22 million project. And then even more recently, the Aspire Center on the West Side. That's a $37 million development that would not have happened without the We Rise dollars being part of that capital stack.
Thank you. And Kristen, I want to get sort of a broader perspective from you. Your role, obviously, at We Rise Together. What is exciting about what you do?
Oh my gosh, so much. But I think the biggest thing is really there are all these incredible ideas all over the city of Chicago led by absolutely brilliant community leaders. And they just needed a little bit of extra to get through that valley of death to really become a reality in the development process. And we were able to be there in that moment. I think as Kevin mentioned, many of our projects have government funding and they have tax credit funding, but those can be really rigid funding sources. And without some flexible, large, speedy capital, that money doesn't ever get activated. And so to be able to come to the table with resources that made things actually happen because we were able to be big and flexible. And none of that would happen if we hadn't come together as a collaborative. It's too big a project for any individual donor to work on. And the one other thing that I think makes me super excited, because I've worked in community development for a long time, is the work we've done on evaluating the impact of these projects. And I know that all of us in this room know that these buildings make an impact. We understand all the different components, but because we were doing 40 at a time, we were able to bring some evaluation resources to the table that haven't been available to any individual project. So we have Loyola coming and looking at secondary economic data. Every summer, we are out in neighborhoods asking residents who have an investment in their community, how does this make you feel about your neighborhood? Is this changing how you interact with your space and how you see your future? And also, we've contracted with MasterCard to come and measure spend, change in spend as these buildings open. And I won't steal Andrea's thunder, but I mean, we are able now to put numbers on the economic impact of so much of the work we've all done in the past. And now we can really see that dollar and cents number at the end of the day.
So then, you know, getting into a little bit of that impact, because I definitely want to come back to the data, like the numbers and the sort of the economic impact that you mentioned with regards to the research you've gotten from MasterCard. But, you know, there's the direct impact, right, of the services. So, for example, Andrea, on the children. But then there's also the ripple effect that is not economic, not directly anyway. And so, Andrea, maybe you can start telling me a little bit about that. And then, Kendra, maybe you can as well.
Well, really, the ripple effect is something that is so hard to calculate. But when you look at the North Austin Center, you have By the Hand Club providing intensive holistic support for eventually we'll serve 400 children K through 12th grade. On our campus is our partner at the Gap Revive Center, where they're running one of the largest food banks in the city of Chicago, serving over 1,000 families a week. And then you have all the children who are receiving sports and after school and extracurricular. And that all adds up to higher high school graduation rates. That adds up to physically healthier families. That adds up to socially and emotionally healthier families. I live across the street from the center, and I had lived across the street for a little bit. And when the center opened, I finally met my neighbors, right? When you don't have gathering spaces in your community, you don't meet your neighbors. So when you add all that up, I am confident that we will see a famous surgeon come out of North Austin. We'll see the next Messy come out of North Austin. It's just giving our community a leg up and a chance to shine.
I guess I would say, I think in terms of like narrative versus numbers, I mean, we can always have data and talk about what is the impact of the data and numbers and community, but what is like the intangible things that come from that? I mean, I think about, and I've done this way too many times, every time I walk into Justice of the Pies on 87th Street and I see community people in the neighborhood that I grew up in, like having a beautiful, wonderful space to come and have a coffee or to purchase, you know, items for their birthday parties or family gatherings or things like that.
Hi.
I also think about the incredible grantees who went through this process, like folks like Julia Perkins, who does Urban Core, who's very much thinking about wellness for the South Shore community and opening up with free yoga classes. I've been to Studio Yogi a couple of times. Like, what does that do for the social cohesion of the community when you have people who have had a vision and stewarded that vision and have actually seen that vision come to life, not just for those businesses, but for the community? And what does that do to inspire more developers and more small entrepreneurs to actually make their dreams a reality as well? And I think, again, the flexible funding and the kind of just-in-time funding that We Rise provided enabled some of that to happen. It's not that folks didn't have those ideas or those dreams or that vision. They didn't always have the resources to align and to make them happen. And now we're actually beginning to see that in a very tangible way on the South and West Side.
And you, what you're saying, you know, kind of speaks to the importance of finding what is in that community and allowing the folks in the community the opportunity to do it themselves versus someone coming in and
yes.
saying, well, what I really need here is a community center and I'm going to build it. And,
right.
Yeah. Kevin, tell me a little bit, if you would, about Chase's role, and because you mentioned the new market tax credits and how that works to create investment, and maybe some of you understand how all of that works. I spent a few minutes on it, and I'm still not sure. So, which is like, why we have Kevin.
Well, I joke around that we make it complicated for job security, but
we make it look really hard.
But no, and you know, and not only from our community development banking team, but also our corporate responsibility team has been very active, you know, co-granting or supporting some of these projects, as well as the leaders, which I think, you know, is not to be understated, is just how important the investment in leaders and giving them the space, the capacity, the connections to be able to continue to build upon these great funding sources. You know, I think one of the other partners internally that I would be really remiss without mentioning are our CDFI partners. So like all of those projects and many more projects that we've invested in, both from the philanthropic side as well as the commercial bank side, are with CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institutions. So I see Chicago Community Loan Fund here. Full disclosure, I am on the board of CCLF, but I also see our friends over at... thank you, Bethel.
But I also see our friends at IFF here in the room. LISC and Enterprise were both parts of these projects. CNI mentioned earlier. You know, there's just a real benefit here in Chicago of a deep community development industry with a lot of people that are passionate and have tons of experience in what's oftentimes referred to as lasagna financing, right? Like all the different ingredients that need to come together to make a project like this work, or a project like these work. And WeRise is right at the forefront of that.
What are sort of the criteria for a potential development? Like, how do you know whether something is ready? And then, Kristen, I want to come to you for this as well. But how do you know when something is ready for the kind of investment that WeRise Together brings?
Yeah. So I think the community support, as mentioned, right? Not having it being imputed upon a community, but really coming from the community, knowing that there's that buy-in for the sustainability, not only beyond the grant period or the new market tax credit compliance period, but for hopefully generations to come. Looking at the capital stack and making sure all the capital sources are there. And as mentioned earlier, a lot of times different funding sources don't play well together. And so the flexibility of WeRise and other philanthropic sources to be able to, you know, give other funding sources the confidence that, you know, these parties can work together, these funding sources can work together and complete the full needs of the project are really important.
Kristen?
Yeah, I'm going to repeat a little bit of what Kevin said, because it really all begins with community leadership. When the community says, this is what we want, this is what we need, you have a real sense that this is what's going to have an impact. So we start there. And then because WeRise is time limited, we're a 5-year initiative, we're looking for projects that were really already moving forward and just needed that extra flexible capital to activate lots of the other things that they had in place. And so we were looking at those. And then one of the things that we really went back and forth on early on is like, okay, does this have to be a job creator? Does this have to sort of meet a very rigid definition of economic impact? And what we came to was, no, let's actually let the community tell us what they want. And I think that's been really game changing, because we've found that, yes, job creators make an economic impact, but so do community assets and amenities clustered together. And so do community facilities that communities need to be able to gather at. So we can start to measure with Loyola, say, the increase in foot traffic around 6 of our different projects. And we can match that against the MasterCard data. And so, you know, thinking more, I think, broadly was a really good way to go about this. And as a result, you know, we've funded over 40, 13 of our projects are already open, 8, maybe 10 are under construction right now, and we're committed to supporting them through that process so that at the end of WeRise, we got 40 open. Yeah.
You've mentioned MasterCard a couple of times, and I know we've talked about this. What can you tell us about what we've learned from MasterCard? And then the other trick about that is MasterCard is just one measure, right? There's also cash. There's Visa. Yeah. There's, what do we know?
Yeah, so we have had MasterCard deploy their analytics at 6 different sites. And I'll speak, because we've got Andrea here today, about North Austin Center. We've asked them to measure, find a benchmark community with similar demographics and benchmark against those communities. What's the impact when you get an investment like the North Austin Center or like Ogden Commons or a Poder. And what they're able to show us within a 1/2-mile radius of the North Austin Center is over 170,000 increased transactions in just the first year. That totals over 8% increase in spending over a benchmark compared to a comparison community. And that is growing. And so these are our most recent numbers, but what you can see from the moment that North Austin Center opened over the last year, as each program has opened up and the foot traffic has increased, we're seeing increasing spending in that neighborhood. And it's incredibly exciting to be able to go and say, see, like, this is a community center, but it's also an economic engine.
Give us a sense, if you would, of sort of how WeRise Together helps folks on the journey, right? Because it's not just about, you know, bringing in the, like you said, the funds, the capital, right, to help get something going, but also sort of helping someone figure out, you know, capacity building or, you know, getting through some of the red tape that we're going to talk about in a minute as well.
Yeah, we've partnered with MPC on this. How do you support and come alongside project leaders? Brilliant people who know tons about their neighborhoods and but might not have experience as developers. How do we support people on that journey? And so we started the first year doing peer learning and cohort support. The second year, we've offered technical assistance from a variety of partners. And we continue to ask, go back and ask, what else do you need? What do you need next? And we're not just doing that just to get our projects open, which is important, but also to learn from them together. Okay, where are we seeing similarities in things that people are experiencing across the sector, across the industry, so that we can make policy change? And that's where MPC's partnership has just been incredibly valuable.
Same question to you, Kendra.
Yeah, similarly, I think, you know, with the peer learning, the working groups that we did in the first year, we learned a lot. I mean, we learned, first of all, well, many of you know this, you have to almost get your own master's degree in the city development process to get something through the system because it is not transparent, it's hard, it's difficult. But we learned that, you know, folks who are trying to run their businesses and they're not profits, they didn't have time to really just really understand how to navigate that thoroughly. They needed support around that. They also, you know, were getting gumped up in permitting challenges and utility challenges. And so they couldn't think about kind of like the next step around post-occupancy and marketing and building their base and those things because they were getting so gumped up in the construction process. And so where we started with the peer learning to be focused kind of more like more on post-occupancy services, we had to like stop and pivot and say, okay, we need to stop. We need to listen to what people are saying. And we did a survey across, I think, all the We Rise grantees to really better understand where the pain points were. And I remember you sharing this, like we sent the survey out, I think, on a Friday. Friday at like 9 o'clock or something like
that.
The
worst time I've ever sent a survey out ever.
And we got like a 95% response rate within like 24 hours. I mean, this is how we knew it was very important. And so we felt really, really grateful as grantees to be able to like stop and pause and have funders who would listen and say, no, like we can't keep going down this road that we built out. We need to pivot to be responsive to the community that we're serving. And so we did those interviews. We collated that data. We shared some of that with the city in the first year. And then for the next year, we really pivoted our approach to provide some really strategic support around permitting and kind of concierge services to a number of projects, but to really work with other projects and to map their experience so that we can actually begin to identify what the pain points were as they were going through the process. And that's something that's never been done from like a user perspective. And so we have this huge journey map that I'm happy to share with any of y'all if y'all care to see it. A number of people in this room helped contribute to that. We were also at the same time doing an assessment of zoning practices and policy for the city of Chicago. So we were having a number of other interviews and conversations with practitioners in the ecosystem. Many of y'all in this room, so thank you for that. So we were able to combine that data from the journey mapping and the We Rise grantees with over 100 architects and developers and other practitioners to really better understand where some of the pain points were around the system. And we collated that and we were able to share that with the city and funders and other partners. And I think it was a combination of our advocacy and a number of other people in this room and outside this room, like saying, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem, that led to the city's Cut the Tape initiative, which we're, you know, cautiously optimistic about, you know, that we'll actually be able to do something and actually begin to shift policy and practice. So the development process, particularly for small and BIPOC businesses, you know, can be more equitable because we know the impact of construction delays and permitting delays and utility challenges hit those small projects much differently than the large, well-resourced organizations who can budget that, quite honestly, into their budget. But when you're a small organization or you're already, you know, wrestling with access to capital is a organization of color, entrepreneur of color, when you get something that's going to, you know, be a $20,000 gap in your budget, it messes up your whole capital stack and you almost have to start from scratch. And so we want to be able to look at policy and practice with the city to help reform that, hopefully in the coming months and years.
Sounds like it could be troublesome enough to actually like be a make or break point for some folks. Like
yes.
They can't get
yes.
through
they
that
can
process.
Shut down a project, mm-hmm. which right. many of these people in the room can do.
You mentioned the mayor's, you know, he really, what was it, last month, earlier this month, released the Cut the Tape
April,
report.
Yeah, early in April.
What is your reaction to that? You mentioned cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think with bureaucracy and political will, I'm always cautiously optimistic about anything.
You're among friends.
I've heard, I think, strong commitment from the mayor's office to actually do things differently, so that's good. I think there are some things like reducing, you know, redundant reviews, evaluating how boards and commissions work, automating the system that's important to look at. But I think also the devil's in the details. We are hoping to, you know, continue to work with the mayor's office and helping them think about how they shape this. I know the next steps is going to be a task force, of cross-sector task force to really help support implementation of the recommendations and the 10 big bets that were highlighted in that report. So we're optimistic about helping to move that forward.
Andrea and Kevin, I want to ask both of you like about the challenges from your perspectives. But Andrea, when we were speaking on the Zoom a few weeks ago, you told a story that like it still kind of sits with me, right? About the trouble that you all had with sort of remediating the land where you now sit. If you would tell our friends,
sure.
For those who don't know.
So I think, and this is just so spot on with everything that's been said so far, is that these community-led projects, they're sitting at the intersection of a lot of conversations that are really big right now around community disinvestment. So we're working with communities. We're doing these projects in communities that haven't had big investments in decades. And our project in particular had been a vacant brownfield for over 40 years. And then you're dealing with systems that haven't caught up yet to help you.
Yeah.
So our project, when we got started, again, there's processes that you go through with environmental remediation, and we got the green light and the permit to start doing our construction, and we started digging, and we had budgeted for, I believe, 50 truckloads of concrete removal, and I remember about 2 months of my life was just talking about concrete. Truckload after truckload after truckload, and that was enough. We hadn't laid foundation yet, and it was just removing this buried concrete. And so when you have these sites that have been disinvested so historically and for generations, as the community leaders, you don't really know there's a certain amount of risk that you're going into to even do this work. And that's why partners and why We Rise Together has been just so pivotal, because it can feel so lonely. And bringing all the community leaders together to do this work, to commiserate, and then out of that commiserating, you find solutions. And I called this person, and I worked with this person, and you start getting to that map that was created.
Yeah. That's when the magic happens, when the community and leaders and the project leads get together and they share information and they create their own network when the people, you know, for folks who are going through this for the first time.
Which is why We Rise Together is a good name, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not by accident that we use together in the name. It actually is the secret sauce, right? All these projects are individually impressive and amazing, but individually they don't add up to what doing them all together has added up to, and that's where we're incredibly grateful. We're grateful that community leaders trusted us, that we 160 donors trusted us to do this, because I don't think we could have done this one by one and gotten to where we are today.
Kevin, from your perspective, what have been the challenges?
So I think the negative land value that that was just mentioned, you know, if you receive a lot of land for free, if it has environmental issues, you know, that remediation is going to really kind of take the actual value of that into a negative spot. And so I think one of the things that is really important that I know IFF has been very much a forerunner on is non-appraisal-based lending, because the appraisal, you know, valuation is going to probably end up coming in lower than the cost ending up to build or to rehab that facility. So I think that's one of the really big challenges. Getting back to the point about the Cut the Tape initiative, mm-hmm. You know, I think that I really applaud the mayor's office, and I know a few of the commissioners at Housing and Economic Development, and I've heard them speak, and you know, they all come from kind of a development background, so they really understand the development challenges, which I think I'm really optimistic about, you know, just identifying like how how we as a city can cut the tape and really kind of allow projects to move forward in a more expedited manner, because time is money, especially with interest rates being as high as they are. That really has put a headwind on a lot of real estate development.
And I'm going to get to your questions as well. I already have a few here, but I want to go to Kristen for one more, because you've mentioned that this project sunsets in 2025. I heard some, I hear about the work that you're doing, and then I get concerned. I'm like, if you're sunsetting in 2025, then what happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most exciting things about this work is the pipeline of projects that we have built. As people have started to understand that these things can happen, dreams are becoming real, and people are moving forward with real projects, and a way that we are building the possibility of projects that didn't necessarily exist before 2020. So that is very exciting. I think we have to think about two things. One, the lessons we've learned as we rise, and make sure we're sharing those. So, okay, how are we going to fix our systems around zoning and permitting and utilities? How are we going to make sure that project leaders have an opportunity to work together? And we're going to share those broadly with everybody. But also, what are the financing and funding systems that need to be in place to continue to support this pipeline of brilliant ideas? I mean, yes, these projects can be risky, but I believe the bigger risk is not doing these projects. We would not... No, thanks. If we hadn't built, if, you know, North Austin Center hadn't gotten built, we wouldn't have a chance to show through data, through MasterCard, the impact. If we don't do these projects, our communities can't thrive. So thinking about what that ongoing funding and financing is going to look like and how we can do it together, because, again, I go back to this, one by one is great, but it never gives us the opportunity to learn and support and do the other pieces that get these places really expedited through the process.
Thank you.
So keep talking to me. Call me. We got ideas, and we're looking forward to working with everybody in this room on them.
So I'm going to go to a couple of questions that have already been submitted by members of our audience. And I think they have the opportunity to submit more.
They did. I forgot to mention it.
They do. Jackie forgot to mention it. You do. So let me know what they are. Okay, so I'm going to start with this one because I like it. Rashad Bell of Chicago Cares, Inc. How can businesses support and uplift community work? Who wants to jump on that one first?
Well, We Rise, we're talking today about the Neighborhood Anchor Grants, and those really were the first pieces of the puzzle because we wanted community to be able to touch and feel and see that investment was coming to their neighborhood and that it wasn't just cranes and backhoes on the north side. But with every one of these communities, we're going back and doing what we call layering grants. We're going back to look for the workforce agencies who are in that same neighborhood so that folks looking for jobs can connect to the economy. And we're going back with support for the small businesses. You know, I think one of the most important things that employers can do when we think about workforce is get creative about what talent looks like and open your mind. Just like, again, these projects that we've invested in, we had to be a little bit more open-minded about what does economic impact look like. I think sometimes employers have to be a little bit more open-minded about what talent looks like. Partner with the workforce agencies in neighborhoods and citywide and ask them what kind of talent they're seeing and what kind of capacity there is in the neighborhood. And I think sort of just opening the aperture on that can be really powerful.
Another one, David Feinberg, CCLF. What set of operational challenges do the projects you support encounter in years 3 to 5? Mm-hmm. Anyone? I can't answer it. So Kevin,
I'll take a stab at
sure.
it. No, but I guess going back to the other point, as far as like what local businesses do, and then I'll jump to that question
sure.
again. At JPMorgan Chase, you know, we hear our chairman Jamie Dimon talk about stakeholders, right? Not just shareholders, but stakeholders. And I think that permeates through all types of businesses, both large multinational banks like us and also small businesses on Main Street. And like thinking about the stakeholders. So sometimes what development incurs is like pushback from the community. And if the businesses are engaged at the table at those community hearings, you know, really cheering on that development because it's important to the liveliness of their community, I think that's important. Now, that's easier said than done because I know small business owners and business owners have a lot on their plate, and so hours in the day are very limited. But having that you know, stakeholder in the community engagement, I think, is really important for a lot of developers that we speak with. The second that we're really proud of at JPMorgan Chase is the Second Chance Hiring Initiative. So we've been a big funder of that, and we really believe in that very strongly. And so
you know, thinking about people that maybe otherwise wouldn't be on the first cut of the resume AI, you know, screen or whatever, and really trying to identify where we can engage people that are need a second chance and maybe made an error or were in a bad situation a long time ago. So those are like two things I wanted to say about how business engagement could be involved. On the last point, in years like 3 to 5, you know, I think some of it's transition, right? You know, there's always mobility and people moving around from different seats, and a lot of the reporting for new market tax credits and grants is on the staff of the controller or the CFO. And I think that's one of the things that we see is something challenging that they need to overcome is, like, how do you set up that institutional knowledge of what needs to be reported beyond just the first year or two, and so that they're able to continue that impact reporting that is so important to all of us to continue these programs and gathering that information. How does the nonprofit, you know, able to maintain that?
Andrea, did you want to add?
Yeah, I think one thing that I've learned that really prevents a lot of challenges is multi-phase development. So at the North Austin Center, we have some spaces that we have big plans for, but we still have $3.7 million left to raise. And so we have an incredible multi-purpose room that has infrastructure for stadium-style seating to do community events and seat up to 400 folks in there. But right now, it's kind of just a blank box room. And what that does is we get to open. You know, we're not letting perfect be the enemy of good. We're still doing tons of things in that room, and we're not waiting for things to be perfect, but we're still have our operations moving in the building. And we're able to start small, and as Kristen mentioned, adding programs on as we go. And there has been some community feedback. Oh, well, how come you don't have this program yet or that program yet? And we said, hang tight, we will. We're building the staff. We're building the operational funds, and we'll phase those things in over time. And the community support with that response has been tremendous. And so I think phasing things in over time, including some of your dream projects, the dream things the community wants, can be added in later, but that shouldn't keep you from opening. And so scaling back the operations a little bit to start is really helpful.
Anyone else? No pressure. another question from Graham Grady. Hey, Graham.
Hi, Brandon.
Oh, there you are. Hi. Of Taft Law Firm. Philanthropy, exclamation point. How can we encourage Chicago's foundations to get even more involved in capital development in addition to supporting great social services?
Yeah. Tell your friends, Chris.
Yeah. All you.
Well, I'm new to philanthropy, but it's so powerful. I think the flexibility and the size and the speed that philanthropy can move at. So philanthropy isn't going to fund these deals by themselves, right? There's always going to be this other capital that has to be in place. What philanthropy can do is make sure that we're the grease that makes all the gears move. Make sure there's enough. If you don't have enough oil in your car, it doesn't work. And so I think really getting some imagination for how you can be flexible, how you can meet projects where they're at, still take risk. So we were clear that we didn't have to be the last dollar in. We wanted to see momentum. We wanted to see that projects had these sort of the big chunks of their funding in place. But don't wait. Don't be the one that waits till the very end, because that's the least risky place. And in fact, you need to get in as philanthropy a little bit before that. And frequently when a philanthropist comes in and says, I'm making a big bet, it encourages other people to crowd towards those projects as well. So I think those are the things that I would really encourage my philanthropic partners and friends to consider when they look at capital.
Yeah, I would agree. I think philanthropy, in addition to coalitions like We Rise, where you have the collective power of philanthropy, really has an opportunity to hopefully retrain or challenge the financial industry about how they think about and how they assess risk. And that is, I think, the long-term goal of what needs to happen, particularly how they assess risk in Black and brown communities.
Another question from Evelyn Shelton of Evelyn's Food Love. Will We Rise Together ever partner with small business owners who are making a difference in underserved communities? Or how would small business owners participate with your partner agencies to make a difference in the communities we serve?
Well, thanks for the question, Evelyn. Yes, we have and we will. Many of the ways we've partnered is supporting business service organizations. We're working through some applications right now to help business service organizations to really amp up access to capital for small businesses. We know, again, that philanthropy can put some money in, but our spend is never going to match what the government sector is or what the private sector is. So ultimately, we should all be moving towards a place where there's thriving private sector industries in communities owned by community leaders and members. Yes, we're supporting business service organizations to help build, say, the construction industry, to work with Southside restaurants, and now accessing capital for all different kinds of industries. Yes, I agree. That is one of the building blocks of a local economy.
I like this next one from Nicole Johnson at Epic Academy. How do we leverage schools as community institutions to play a role in community economic development?
I feel like I can take that one.
I think one of the things that I'll speak specifically for through By the Hand Club that we do is we involve our students in every aspect of community and community development. So we bring our students to meetings. We bring our students to aldermanic meetings. We have youth entrepreneurship programs. By the Hand Club purchased a looted liquor store and knocked it down and popped up a youth-led fresh market. And so I think our youth are actually capable of being the ones to lead this work, and it's about giving them access to the people in this room and a platform to take their ideas and run with it, and then it's up to philanthropy and the private sector and the government to fund their ideas and take them off, and it's just amazing to see what our youth have done and will do.
I want to just add, I'm hoping Andrea will tell this great story. When we were looking at funding the North Austin Center, one of the questions we got is, how is this going to be connected to the local economy? So, you know, I asked, like, how are you going to make sure that when people come here, they're connected to the local economy? I didn't actually know what answer I was going to get, but they came up with this remarkable idea, which is to create a QR code. When you walk in the building, you scan it, and it links you to all these locally owned restaurants. And maybe you can tell us maybe about sort of one of the most epic examples of someone using that.
So the most epic example was the very first time Jason Hayward, after he left the Cubs and went to the Dodgers, he brought the whole entire Dodgers team to North Austin.
Oh, wow.
Which is just incredible. And they said, we're hungry. And we said, well, look at this amazing QR code. You can pick a place to eat. And so the Dodgers went out to eat in the North Austin neighborhood. And that's when you see that MasterCard lift. I mean, it's local, but it's also bringing people to the community. Yeah.
The Dodgers.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk? Also, your move, Cubs, White Sox. Okay, I think we've got time for one more question. This one from Stacey Canada, Preforma Asset Solutions. This one might be for you, Kevin, but I don't know. What are the requirements for obtaining financing for large mixed-use development projects?
Depending on the program, if you're really trying to serve different income bands with affordable housing, there are different types of programs. So quite low-income individuals can be served through the low-income housing tax credit program, and there's a whole qualified allocation plan that is involved with getting tax credits for that type of project. For new market tax credits, it's really based on census tract and really serving an extremely low-income area. We're happy to run the address against a database to see if it qualifies from a geographic perspective. But then there's a lot of impact components to it as well. For new market tax credits, extremely competitive, and those projects that have the highest impacts will qualify. There's a lot of other programs or subsidy sources, whether it be grant initiatives like We Rise, or there's TIF financing at the city. There's all kinds of different programs. So it kind of depends on which program that the project is targeting and what location it's going to be in.
Okay. Please help me thank our panelists.
I was getting ready to say that, but Brandis, of course, who is the professional, beat me to that. How did you all come up with the name of We Rise Together, Kristen?
I was not actually there, but it really was. How do we come together to come to a more equitable economic recovery post-COVID? This idea that we cannot settle for the past version, but we have to imagine something in the future and that we have to do it together.
That's great. My takeaway for today is don't let perfect become the enemy of good. Mm. That is so important. Thank you for that. Yeah, it was good, right? So my forgetfulness in asking you all to write questions and bring them up was my ploy to have a third part. Amanda, does that work? I don't know. I was just trying to make up for the fact that a third part. You know, we could have another.
Part three.
Yeah, part three. See? Third part, part three. That's why she does what she does and I do what I do.
A third part.
So there are so many folks in the room, and I am sure that many of you want to have conversations with one another. I sometimes just stand back after programs and watch you all have conversations. It's almost magic. Dan would say, this is why we are here, to have the conversations. So thank you all for being here. To Andrea, Kristen, Andrea, both Andreas, Kendra, Kevin, and of course, Brandis. We can't thank you enough because you all are needed to have the conversation. So as Dan would say, before we depart, there is more to come. I think that it is so important that we continue having these conversations and that we understand that it's community that makes Chicago work. And I'm biased. I think there's no place like Chicago. You guys could clap for that. Thank you all for being here, and we are adjourned.